designed to benefit all Missouri taxpayers with an extra protection built in for the lowest wage Missourians. It's designed to help the small businesses, the corner stores, your neighborhood stores, your electricians, your plumbers, dry cleaners, small retail owners, local restaurants, and your florist. These are our constituents, and these are businesses that provide a vast majority of the jobs for Missourians. Let's talk about who this is not designed for. It is not designed for one corporation or one industry. This is not pick one St. Louis company for which this body authorized 17 times the cost of this bill. This is the people's tax cut, Mr. President. This is the people's tax cut. Where some want to pick who gets a tax cut, this is for all Missouri taxpayers. Mr. President, I'd like to inquire the senator from 15th.
The senator from the 8th has moved for the adoption of Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bills 509 and 496. Senator from the 15th, you yield?
Yes.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, you've got a companion bill that's linked with this bill. Your bill focused primarily on the business pass-through. I know there was an article on Friday written at us that was in one of the newspapers, if you want to call it that, that talked about how bad this was.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to give you the opportunity to come up and kind of talk about why you think that's important. I agree with you, but I think it's important that everybody understands why is it important for small businesses?
Well, to single out two kinds of small businesses, potentially, attorneys and lobbyists, because they probably don't have the best reputation in the general public, to try to somehow take away from the first bill that we would ever pass in the state that we could get on the books that would provide tax relief to small businesses, to me, is pretty short-sighted. You know, our state has an emerging high-tech industry on both sides of the state and everywhere in between. These are the kinds of people that would benefit from saving half of what they currently send to Jefferson City when they have their two employees as they're starting that high-tech venture, Locker Dome, or whoever you're talking about, to reinvest that capital in their business, to hire another person to come on and do IT work, or to buy that new, you know, piece of equipment that's going to make them more competitive. These are the people that we're talking about. And so anytime we've had a discussion previously, particularly like the franchise tax a couple years ago, those are generally larger businesses, and they're worth, I mean, my father, for example, worked for 30 years at Anheuser-Busch. He was able to put me, it elevated him. He was able to put me through college through that, and my sisters. It meant a lot to our family. I have another uncle that worked at AB, another uncle that worked at AT&T, another uncle that worked at Boeing. So these bigger companies certainly have a really important role to play in how we proceed and people having good, meaningful jobs that can help, you know, their kids succeed. But nothing we've ever done, which is really important, if you just deal with the corporate income tax, has ever done anything for, you know, Kirkwood Plumbing or the dry cleaner down at Markwart's or any of those kinds of businesses that are small businesses that are not organized as C-Corps. So this is really, in a historic, in many ways, effort for us to lead on tax reform that can help every kind of business in this state. It's interesting at the hearing in your committee, 77% of all of the businesses in our state have 10 or fewer employees. 64% have fewer than 5 employees. And so for anybody, the governor's office, whoever, to wage war on these small businesses by saying they don't deserve the benefit of tax relief, to me, is foolhardy. These are exactly the kinds of folks that are making payroll every week to pay folks that they're employing. They are also the people that buy equipment that lead to greater sales tax revenues. I mean, you've brought up this example in Oklahoma. They've cut taxes, and they've seen a growth in revenue. Their economy has expanded. Now, people want to cherry pick where those numbers come from, whether it's income tax or sales tax. But if you look at the overall numbers, they've grown. And so for us to be able to say to all of those businesses in the state, we understand we're in difficult economic times. We believe this leads to economic expansion. And oh, by the way, take a look around us. All the other states that surround us, save Illinois, which I haven't seen a lot of proposals that try to emulate the way Illinois does business. They're raising taxes. would allow us to be more competitive. And so I think that this is really important for us to do. And we can look, everybody can do the rhetorical stuff and wage in class warfare and say who's getting what or whatever. But here's what I know. The people that when I go back home to my district and I go to that local coffee shop or I go out to eat with my family, those are family-run businesses that would benefit from this. And so I think we just got to take a good, hard look, peel back a little of the layer of the rhetoric that's being thrown out there and say that this is good for our state.
Let's talk about the cost, because the cost was in the article done by a partisan organization, said it was $500 million. That's not the cost. What's the fiscal note on your bill, Senator?
Glad you asked that question.
I mean, I think the fiscal note...
Because the fiscal note is... Now, okay. The fiscal note's $31 million a year. Okay. Fully phased in is...
For a 50% deduction
about taxes for every business in the state, I think the fiscal note's like $170 million.
My math is not the greatest in the world, but $500 million, that's nowhere near. Over double.
Right.
So, I mean,
That's the Missouri Budget Project's numbers, and with all due respect to them, I enjoy talking with them, and this is part of the process to have disagreement and have reasonable debates. I'm not vilifying them anyway, but their numbers are way off. It's ridiculous. The fiscal note here, by the folks that we, accept fiscal notes from, is a number that's a third of that. And here's the other really important point that we made last year that I don't think we talk about enough. If we, in fact, don't do this, if we listen to people who believe that we shouldn't move forward on tax reform, there is a fiscal note associated with inaction. We just don't know what that is. Like, you can't... The idea that a business on state that's on the eastern side of State Line Road right now, where you live, isn't going to make a rational economic decision that if they move their auto repair shop a half a mile to the west, that they can save 6-7%, we're fooling ourselves. So we just don't know what that number is. So this is a proactive attempt for us to say, we're not going to maybe go as far as some, right, wrong, or indifferent, but this is our attempt to say we're going to provide tax relief for every business and job creator in the state. And, oh, by the way, also believe in providing tax relief for every Missourian. We haven't done that in 100 years. And I think you've cited some of the numbers, 47th in GDP growth over the last 10 years. If anybody can look at that and honestly say everything we're doing right now is the right thing to do, then I guess that's their opinion. But I know that you and I and many others have a different opinion about that.
Let's talk a little bit more about this fiscal note. I want to make sure everybody understands. So this organization that came out and said $500 million when our fiscal note is 170 or whatever is what you said, did they come out in opposition to the special session bill?
No, they did not.
Did not. And they didn't challenge that fiscal note, which was $1.7 billion, done by the exact same people that did your fiscal note.
Right.
So there's no challenge on that fiscal note.
That's exactly right.
But they're challenging this one. They're saying that this one is wrong. I think the senator has some people he wants to introduce. So when he gets over there, we'll pause so he can introduce his guests. And I can end probably with you. I just think it's ironic that what some people pick on and what other people don't. 1.7 for company isn't discussed, but we're talking about a pass through for small businesses, and they want to increase the fiscal. Inquire the senator from Cape.
Does the senator from Cape yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, I know that you're on the committee and you study economics. And what's your overall take on taxes and what do you think about this bill and what Missouri is doing to try to grow its economy?
Well, Senator, I like this bill. I consider myself a student of economics. When I was a sophomore in high school, I found a fascination with economics. Probably most people don't. So I went on to major in business administration, where I studied extensively macro and microeconomics. My master's degree studied economics. A lot of people are confused by economics, and I can see why, because in my master's degree, they had a lot of calculus formulas in there, which would make anyone's head spin. But fortunately, you don't have to be a calculus whiz to understand economics, because it's really based on some simple principles. So if you look at economic principle, and then followed up with historical example, you'll find that tax cuts add to economic development and job growth. Not many presidents, it seems anymore, understand economics, but when I was in high school, one did, and I was very impressed. JFK even went on to say that we needed a tax cut because he knew that that was the job growth driver, the economic development driver, and unfortunately, he wasn't around to see that happen, but it did happen, and of course, the most recent example that people really like to study is Reaganomics, where his had decades of growth under his tax cuts. I've read a lot of studies over the years, but the one I find the best is called Hauser's Law. He was an investment economist, and he studied tax law. Now, this was at the national level, not the state level, from about 1955 to 2010. So a very broad, long-range study. I haven't seen any quite as extensive as his. And he compared tax rates to general revenue and to gross domestic product. And what he found out was is that no matter what the tax rate was, and it was very high in 1955, probably upwards of 70% or more, that the general revenue based on gross domestic product just really averaged around 19%. When taxes were start to be lowered, that rate didn't change as far as general revenue, but what did change was the gross domestic product. That grew exponentially, and so now you had the same percentage, but of a lot larger number. And so our tax coffers, general revenue came in more. Now, I know we always have people testify that, it's going to cost the state money, but they're really not looking outside the box because when you do a fiscal study, it just says this is the amount of income you're going to lose.
Right.
No one goes on to say, but what is that going to generate?
Let's go back to your Kennedy tax cuts. So my understanding, and I'm looking at a report here, that Hoover dramatically increased in 1930, increased the rates, and so did President Roosevelt. President Kennedy came in and across the board took that top rate. It was at 90% down to 70%. And what it says here basically is revenue grew by 62%. So, that was a Democrat president that lowered the top rate, which is kind of what we're doing. We're lowering the rate from 6% down to 5% in this bill. These are facts, right? These are what happened back then, and I appreciate you bringing up that situation and talking a little bit about economics. Anything else, Senator?
Right, and that's what the people don't understand, and economics can get kind of fuzzy at times, but you just compare the economic principle to historical example. And more recently, just in the state of Oklahoma, I think over the last 8 years, and they've had tax cuts, they've exceeded their estimated general revenue every year. And that's why a lot of states around the country, I think Indiana and Ohio, are doing some of that we find out the states realize that if you want economic development, job growth, you don't grow government, but you grow individuals' income, you grow small businesses, you grow corporation income, because that's the driving factor to get more jobs, and then those people pay more taxes.
I'm glad you mentioned Oklahoma. I like to talk about Oklahoma because Oklahoma actually, under a Democrat governor, passed a tax cut from 7% down to 5.25%. And in that time frame, their revenue grew, their income tax grew $296 million, and their sales tax went up $92 million. And back when they passed this, oh my goodness, we're not going to have enough money to fund all these programs. What are we going to do? And revenues came in year after year higher. And they've progressively lowered their income tax on the top rates, just like what we're talking about doing here in this bill, like Kennedy did, Oklahoma did it. It's a state that's right here in the Midwest, and their revenues grew. So I appreciate you bringing up Oklahoma, too.
Well, we're the show-me state, and I think there's been several states already that showed me, and it's time to act.
Well, 18 states. We can go over them if you wanted to. 18 states last year passed tax cut. Arkansas, bordering state, personal income tax cut. Indiana, personal income tax and corporate tax, $1.1 billion they passed last year. Iowa cut $4.4 billion. Obviously, Kansas, $3.8 billion. to just name a few and keep going. North Carolina did a personal and corporate tax cut, $500 million. North Dakota, $1.1 billion cut. Ohio, personal and small business, $2.7 billion. In Oklahoma, we talked about the fact that they cut again. They cut in 05 to 09, and then they turned around and last year passed another tax cut. And then Wisconsin cut personal income tax by $650 million. So, I other states are doing it. The governor likes to point out the fact that other states are passing Medicaid. Maybe we should, too. And I think that other states are cutting taxes. Maybe we should, too.
I agree.
All right. Thank you, Senator. Okay. Senator, I'd like to inquire the senator from Barton.
The senator from Barton does not appear to be in the chamber. Sergeant-at-Arms, would you please summon the senator from Barton?
Kehoe.
Would you yield to the senator from the 8th for an inquiry?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, how are you?
Good. Sorry, I stepped out just a minute.
Senator, there are many scholars of tax policy in this chamber, but not you're one of the few that I think really get it and understand it. So I think it's important that you weigh in on this, and you've advocated for a change to more of a fair tax model. Obviously, we don't think that probably is going to have much chance to get done this year, but we need to. I wanted to hear what you had to say about this proposal or taxes in general.
Sure. And I mean, you're right. I believe that the best tax policy is tax policy that's easy to understand, that's transparent, all the things that are true about a consumption tax that are completely untrue about an income tax. And so I do think that for the long term prosperity of Missouri, the best thing we could do is eventually work toward getting rid of the income tax on both personal basis and the corporate basis. You're right. I mean, I continue to file that legislation because I do want to continue to talk about it. I want people to continue to think about that, to look at states that have no income tax, to consider the fundamentals of taxation and tax policy and what does make good sense and good policy, what doesn't, and to reevaluate their own thinking. I just believe that the more we do that, the more we move towards a consumption tax. I think your legislation moves us in that direction because it does begin to diminish the state's dependency on the income tax. It does continue to tax prosperity, tax success, and we know that we get less of what we tax and more of what we subsidize.
I was going to make that point. So if you want less of something, you do what with it?
You tax it.
And you want more of something, you do what with it?
You subsidize it.
Or you reduce the tax burden.
Or reduce the taxes, right.
So I think there's a direct correlation that most people don't understand. If we're penalizing people that make an income by raising the income tax, it kind of diminishes their reason to go out to work. At some point, you're going to say, you know what, why am I going to work to pay more taxes?
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, anyone that thinks about how they do their own taxes, I think, has to draw that conclusion. I mean, we have tax brackets, and you get to a certain income level, and you might bump into a new bracket. And so when people are doing their taxes, they try to get an accountant or someone who knows how they can make sure they have all the deductions that are legal so they can push down and stay in a lower bracket. Well,
yep.
Why? Because people don't like paying taxes. They pay taxes because it's their duty as a citizen, but that doesn't mean that they pay more than they have to. And so we all learn how to use the information that we have and the provisions of tax policy to try to minimize our personal tax burden. And the reason is exactly what you said. It's because there's profit in that. And so if, in fact, you're going to be penalized by being more successful or more prosperous, then there's a question about, well, is this something that it really makes sense for me? If it's actually going to be punished because I do this, then why should I do it? And that's just one of the downsides of even taxing income at all. But obviously, the more we tax it, the more depressive it is towards prosperity and towards innovation and all the other things that we want more of. And the less we tax it, then the less harmful it is to them. And so I support your legislation. I think that you've worked very hard to try to work together with people on both perspectives on this to make a reasonable proposal. And I hope it's successful. I hope you're successful all the way through the governor's office.
Do you think other states, I think you've studied where money goes. Are money is money going to states that are raising taxes, or are they going to states that lower taxes?
If you look at how many, you know, Travis Brown's book, what is it, Money Walks, or how that works? I mean, lots and lots of illustrations in there. I don't know how many people in our chamber have read that or have looked at it or have heard, you know, Mr. Travis speak about that. But the evidence is clear. People go toward the places where they have more economic freedom. And income tax is a step against, you know, against economic freedom. It tends to manipulate our economic freedom because we start watching how it's going to affect our tax situation rather than just doing what we think makes good sense. And so we always move from less freedom to greater freedom, whether it's economics, whether it's personal freedom. You know, why do we have people from all over the globe wanting to immigrate into the United States? Because we have more freedoms here. We're free to do what we want as long as it doesn't violate someone else's freedom. And I think that is in support of what you're trying to do here. It's moving in the right direction. And I think it's far more important what direction that we're going in rather than where we are. We spend too much time talking about where we are and not enough time talking about where we're headed.
Let's talk about where some of the movement of population has gone in the country. I think this last census, Florida gained like 4 seats. Texas gained like 4 seats. Those are states that people will say, well, Texas has got oil and Florida's got tourism.
Okay. But Texas has had oil and Florida has had tourism forever.
Right. Well, let's talk about our neighboring state, Tennessee. Tennessee, if you look at a growth chart, they started out about 2.6 million right. people. In Missouri in the 1930s started out with a little over 3.6. And now the population, this chart only goes till 2005, now Tennessee has surpassed us, and they have surpassed us, and we're below them. Right. And Tennessee doesn't have an income tax, does it?
No, Tennessee has. Well, they've got a little bit of a tax on business income, but very small. No personal income tax there. The Tennessee model is an excellent model to compare to Missouri, because you know you can talk about Texas. Well, Texas has oil. They have a coast. You know, they have ports. You talk about Florida, you know, they've got the tourism, they've got the other things. So those are harder comparisons because there are others. But Tennessee is very close to Missouri in terms of its what its access is to transportation, all the other aspects of Tennessee. And yet Tennessee has gone from well behind us to ahead of us in the last few years. And you have to ask the question, why? And there are very few answers to that except their tax policies.
One last state, and then I'll let you go, and you can say any final statements. State of Washington, in the 1930s, had 5 U.S. representatives, and today they have 10. So they've doubled in size. Yeah. At the same time, we've cut ours in half.
Right.
And they're no tax state. Well, there are no income tax. There's capital gains and some other things, but there's no income tax in the state of Washington.
Right, right. And I think that looking at those, it's hard to escape the clear message that tax policy is important to future prosperity and to the growth of this, and that is reflected many times in the growth of the state. So I congratulate you on the work that you've done and appreciate your inquiry.
All right. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President,
Senator,
one more inquiry of Senator from Cole.
You can inquire of as many senators as you'd like.
I'm just letting everybody know this is my last one.
I yield.
He does proceed.
Senator, you came over to me when I was talking with one of the other senators and said, hey, inquire of me and talk about business. You've been a businessman here in the state of Missouri for a number of years. What does a businessman do if they get a little bit more money back from taxes?
Well, I'll tell you what happens in small businesses. That I know business schools and banks teach small businesses about models, and with all due regard to my banker friends who are in the building here today, but that's normally not reality when you're operating a small business. The model that you might learn in school or the banks want you to follow, it's usually not actually how you're able to do it. When small businesses, and my wife, you know, you've met my wife. She can be really mean. She'd yell at
not
me all
mean.
The time.
She made, was it chicken noodle soup for my son and I when we came down to
that's
hunt?
That's right, yeah.
So she's a wonderful woman.
You have that chicken noodle soup. That's her famous chicken noodle soup.
That was very good, especially since the time I was down there, it was cold out there.
Yeah, it was.
Sorry to interrupt you.
Well, we might can that and look for a McDonald's franchisee to help sell it for us. So, you know, I'm always looking at the center from Cape for marketing ideas. But Sheila would always say to me, you know, we had, you know, a small business in Lynn, Missouri that is today, we started out with 20 people. I sold it to a group of the managers. They now have 100 people. They're one of the largest emergency vehicle manufacturers in the United States. So we worked and grew that business. And then the business here in Jefferson City, we was very small, and we grew that. Small businesses, their owners, they typically don't have savings accounts. Their savings account is their business. And so when they are offered relief in the form of tax relief, what they're going to do is what makes this country great is small business owners want to always do better. They're going to take those dollars and they're going to reinvest it into their business to grow. They're going to try to build more ambulances. They're going to try to sell more cars. They're going to put a wing on in our body shop. And we had some tax relief back in 96. We added on a large addition to our facility. We added 8 employees to it. Now it has 12 back there. So, you know, when small businesses get tax relief, we reinvest it into our business because that's how we're going to grow and survive. You can't sit still as a small business. You always got to do a little bit better. And your business and the assets of that business is your personal savings account. My wife and I never had one. I'm not kidding you. Because every dime we had that we could get, especially when it came to tax relief, we reinvested into the business. That's where our savings account was. And so that's what a lot of sometimes policymakers and bureaucrats don't understand, is that that is your savings account. Your business and what you invest into it and growing it is where all of your resources are.
I've noticed the same thing when I'm talking to other small businesses, and when we take our foot off their throat, they actually go out and do stuff that grows our economy. And so that's what this is all about. Really, this bill is to give them a little bit more of their own money, because that's all we're doing. Is we're not doing something this huge for one big company. We're doing it for all businesses, all small businesses that are LLCs, and all individuals in the state of Missouri.
Yeah, your across-the-board concept is exactly right, because that's what will happen, is that when businesses have the resources, they'll figure out how to spend it better than any elected official will ever figure out how to spend that money.
Well, that's what Kennedy did, and that's what Reagan did, is he took it off the top rate and brought those top rates down, and the economy responded in more money back into the revenue department. So, Senator, anything else?
No, I appreciate you bringing this forward. I think that we need to keep in mind that if we're going to grow the economy, we need to give the people who take the money and put it back into the economy the resources to do that. And I think you'll see an incredible result from that.
All right. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.